devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 47, chapter entitled The Song of the Bee, text number 60. Nayam
Shriyo
Munga U Nitanta Rate Prasada Swaryoshitam Nalina Ganta Rucham Kuto Anya Rasotsave Sya Puja Danda Hita Kanta Labdashisham Ya Udaga Braja Valapinam Nayam Shriyonga Unitanta Rate Prasada.
Nayam Shriyonga Unitanta Rate Prasada.
Nayam Shriyonga Unitante Rate Prasada.
Nayam Shriyonga Unitanta Rate Prasada.
Swaryoshitam Nalina Ganta Rucham Kutonya.
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 Rasotsavesha Buja Danda Grihita Kanta.
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 Labda shisham ya udagad vrajavalipinam.
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 Nayam Shriyonga Unitanta Rate Prasada.
Nayam Shriyonga Unitanta Rate Prasada.
Swaryoshitam Nalina Ganta Rucham Kutonya.
Swaryoshitam Nalina Ganta Rucham Kutonya.
Rasotsavesha Buja Danda Grihita Kanta.
Rasotsavesha Buja Danda Grihita Kanta.
Labda Shisham Ya Udagad Vrajavalapinam.
Labda Shisham Ya Udagad Vrajavalapinam.
Not.
Ayam.
This.
This.
Shriya.
Shriya.
Of the goddess of fortune.
Of the goddess of fortune.
Onge.
Onge.
On the chest.
On the chest.
U.
U.
Alas.
Alas.
Nitanta Rate.
Nitanta Rate.
One who is very intimately related.
One who is very intimately related.
Prasada.
Prasada.
The favor.
The favor.
Swa.
Swa.
Of the heavenly planets.
Of the heavenly planets.
Yoshitam.
Yoshitam.
Of women.
Of women.
Nalina.
Nalina.
Of the lotus flower.
Of the lotus flower.
Ganta.
Ganta.
Having the aroma.
Having the aroma.
Rucham.
Rucham.
And bodily luster.
And bodily luster.
Kuta.
Kuta.
Much less.
Much less.
Anya.
Anya.
Others.
Others.
Rasa Utsave.
Rasa Utsave.
The festival of the Rasa dance.
The festival of the Rasa dance.
Asya.
Asya.
Of Lord Sri Krishna.
Of Lord Sri Krishna.
Bhujadanda.
Bhujadanda.
By the arms.
By the arms.
Grihita.
Grihita.
Embraced.
Embraced.
Kanta.
Kanta.
Their necks.
Okay.
Labda Ashisham.
Labda Ashisham.
Who achieved such a blessing.
Who achieved such a blessing.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Which.
Which.
Udagat.
Udagat.
Became manifest.
Became manifest.
Brajavalipinam.
Brajavalipinam.
Of the beautiful gopis.
Of the beautiful gopis.
The transcendental girls of Brajabhumi. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada and the followers of Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasa Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favour was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily lustre and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women, who are very beautiful according to material estimation. Translation responsibly. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis,
when Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis,
in the Rasa Lila,
in the Rasa Lila,
the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord.
The gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord.
This transcendental favour,
this
was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune,
was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune,
or other consorts in the spiritual world.
Other consorts in the spiritual world.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Never was such a thing.
Never was such a thing.
Even imagined by the most beautiful girls.
Even imagined by the most beautiful girls.
In the heavenly planets.
In the heavenly planets.
Whose bodily lustre and aroma,
whose body and
aroma, resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women,
who are very beautiful,
according to material estimation. Purport. The word meanings in the translation for this verse are taken from Srila Prabhupada's English rendering of Chaitanya Charitamrita Majja 880. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments as follows. Lord Krishna, the best of all avatars, exists on the highest platform of purity and morality, and thus he always remained praiseworthy by all. Even while accepting worldly criticism for his cow tending, wandering in the forest, taking meals with young monkeys, stealing yogurt, seducing other men's wives, and so on. Similarly, the gopis, who are constituted of the Lord's pleasure potency, achieve the highest standard of purity and auspiciousness, even in comparison to the goddess of fortune. And thus the gopis are supremely glorious, even though they were criticized by worldly people because they were mere cowherd women living in the forest and behaving in an apparently improper way. Omagyana timanandasya gilanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swa padantikam pancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindubhya evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So this is the deepest part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is considered that, as we've been discussing in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be non-different from Krishna. And this is stated in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this premise must be understood when one studies the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it is the literary incarnation of God. It is Krishna in literary form, in sound incarnation. It is not different from Krishna. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered as worshipable as Krishna. And just as we worship the deity with an arti, we can also worship the Srimad Bhagavatam in the same manner. It is said in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur discusses the 10 offences against the holy name of Krishna. And one of the 10 offences is to blaspheme the Vedic literature, or literature in the pursuance of the Vedic version. So Haridas Thakur points out, if one does commit that offence to the Shastra, to the Vedas, and commits some offence by blaspheming the Veda, or doubting the teachings of the Vedas, or the statements of the Vedas, then in order to rectify that offence, then one can worship the Srimad Bhagavatam, offer an arti to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and offer chandan and tulsi and flowers, pushpa, to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this will help one to rectify one's offence. So this shows the preeminent position of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is not, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not comparable to any other scripture in the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that if the only two books left in the world were the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, there would be no loss. And at this point in time in Kali Yuga, it would actually be a good thing. It would actually be preferable, you know, if there was nothing else but the Gita and the Bhagavatam left. Because there is so much trash like that. The Bhagavatam says in the 5th chapter of the 1st canto that literatures which glorify topics which are not related to Krishna are like the pilgrimage place for crows. Crows like to go to the rubbish dumps, and they like to enjoy in impure places, impure topics. Just like yesterday, we're doing Harinam around the city, and as we're chanting around the city, they have all the newsstands. And on the newsstands, they have the advertisements on the side of the newsstands of the different women's magazines. You know, Women's Weekly and Dolly and other great scriptures. So they put these things up, and sometimes you read the headlines, you know, and it's just trash, total trash. Right? Nothing, it's just pilgrimage place for crows. Right? The topics are impure, and if one associates with that kind of sound vibration, because the books, transcendental literatures, it is Shabda Brahma. Right? It is transcendental sound recorded by Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva understood that in Kali Yuga, the oral tradition which was previously there in the previous yugas, where the tradition of Vedic knowledge was passed down orally in disciplic succession, that would not be possible within Kali Yuga. We could not have an oral tradition. Although if you go to South India, even to this day, the Rig Veda and some of the other parts of the Vedas are still passed on orally, even to this day. But in general, it would not be possible. You know, it would not be possible for anyone here to memorize the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, most likely. What to speak of the entire Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of, you know, Chaitanya and Charitamrita and those kind of books. It'd be very difficult. So Vyasadeva saw that, so therefore he recorded it. So these books are transcendental sound vibration, as opposed to material books and subject matters. They are full of impure subjects, right? And when you associate with that kind of sound vibration, by reading those kind of books or hearing the topics of those kind of books, it will contaminate your consciousness. This is the main thing that we have to be careful of in spiritual life, one of the main things. The resonance of Kuliagram. Then they came, they said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the behavior of a Vaishnava? How do we understand a Vaishnava? And they asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu this question in three successive years. And one of the answers that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave was, a satsanga tyag, a Vaishnava achar. That means that the achar, or the behavior of the Vaishnava, just like we have this word, acharya, what does it mean?
One who chooses one example.
Acharya means one who teaches by his example, right? So acha means our actions. Pracha means our speech or how we preach. And acha means our activities, right? In spiritual life, the acha and the pracha must be running parallel. Devotee, you can't speak, you know, very pure things and then act impurely. And similarly, you cannot act, you cannot behave purely and then speak impure things. Right? Both must be there in Vaishnava behavior. So Lord Chaitanya said, the achar of the Vaishnava, or the behavior of the Vaishnava, must be asatsanga tyag, which means you must renounce or reject materialistic association. Right? And Raghunath Das Goswami, when he asked Lord Chaitanya for instructions on the renounced order of life, one of the principal instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave to him was do not associate with the worldly people and do not hear what they say. Because this is the most contaminating feature of materialistic association. You hear what the materialists are speaking about, what is going on in their mind, in their consciousness. Just like last week, I was coming back from the loft on the tram coming from the city to Albert Park about 8:30 at night, and I was on the tram, and it was the day before Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day, like that, Nityananda Tridashi. So I wanted to absorb my consciousness in Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya, because Advaita Acharya's appearance day had been the previous week, so I'd been reading about Advaita Acharya, and then I'd been reading about Nityananda Prabhu, and I was reading pastimes where Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya and Lord Chaitanya were associating together. Very nectarian, so I was very much looking forward to going back in the tram and having 25 minutes to read and absorb my consciousness. And then these materialistic personalities got onto the tram and they began to speak very impure subjects. Very impure. Right? Not suitable for public forum. Not suitable to be spoken public. Very impure things, like gutter talk, like that. And I was trying to absorb myself in something pure, right? And it was very difficult with that kind of association there. So tyag, we have to renounce it as much as we can. We're now speaking to Yarra Trams and seeing if they'll arrange one tram just for devotees to travel in and out from the city, our own shuttle tram that we can just take, only for devotees, and there's only Krishna guitar. And when you get on, there's a Prabhupada lecture playing. Right?
Preach on the tram, but
what's that?
You can preach on the tram, but
yeah, you could preach on the tram. That's true. So those who are preachers can get on the other trams. And those who want to absorb themselves or do some reading or chanting, then you can get on this tram like that. Yarra trams will get back to us and let us know if that is possible or not. Okay, I was joking. That's not really true. So the point is that this kind of association is very contaminating, right? Whereas when Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, he wrote the most pure scripture. And it is transcendental sound vibration. And it is mentioned by Vyasadeva in the, or Narada, I think, in the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, that it is relished by people who are thoroughly honest. Right? By people who have a desire to purify their hearts. They relish hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? It is nectarian. Topic is nectarian subject matter. And this part of the Bhagavatam is the most intimate part of the Bhagavatam. It is the most nectarian part of the Bhagavatam. Like that. So Srila Vyasadeva has compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as we were explaining to one guest last night at the Urban Yoga, do we call it the loft? We don't call it the loft. It's Urban Yoga now. Okay. So we call it at Urban Yoga, at our preaching program at Urban Yoga last night. Then we were explaining to one of the guests that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence or the ripened fruit of the entire Vedic knowledge. Right? Srila Vyasadeva divided the Vedas into four bodies, the Rig, Atava, Sama and Yajura Veda. Then he wrote the fifth Veda, the Mahabharata. Right? He wrote the 108 Upanishads, the Itihasas, right? The 18 minor Puranas, the 17 major Puranas. Right? He wrote all of the different Shastras. Right? And then he wrote Vedanta Sutra, which is like the essence of the Vedas. Vedanta means the end of the Vedic knowledge, the final conclusion. And still, When Narada came to visit him after he'd finished all of this work of writing all this down, compiling all this for the residents of Kali Yuga, then Narada came to him and Narada said, "You don't look satisfied. Right? Your face looks despondent. You look like you need to go further. Now, there's something more you need to do." So at that time, he said to Vyasadeva, "Is it possible that you haven't written a scripture or a shastra which has exclusively been dedicated to the glorification of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna? Right? Have you not written one scripture which exclusively is dedicated just to glorifying Sri Krishna and pure devotional service to Sri Krishna?" So at that point, understanding what the deficiency was in his service, then Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Grantharaj, right? The king of the scriptures, right? The Paramahamsa Samhita, which means the scripture which is relished by the topmost Vaishnavas, right? The topmost devotees relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, in Jagannath Puri, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri, he would relish hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the pastime in the Jagannath Ballabha Gardens, when Maharaj Prataparudra wanted to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Mahaprabhu was refusing to see the king. But then the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they arranged that Prataparudra Maharaj would come while Lord Chaitanya was resting in the Jagannath Ballabha Gardens during the Ratha Yatra, and he would massage his feet. So Prataparudra Maharaj came there and began to massage Lord Chaitanya's feet, and he began to chant the Gopi Gita, right? The 31st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was lying back and he was listening. And then when Prataparudra Maharaj got to a particular verse, Burida Janaha, one particular verse which glorifies the gopis, say that those who give Krishna Katha to others are Burida Jana, which means they're the most munificent personalities. So then when Lord Chaitanya heard that, Prataparudra Maharaj speaking these words of the gopis, that whoever speaks Krishna Katha to others and reminds others about Krishna and fills other people's consciousness with Krishna, they're the most munificent personalities. Immediately he sat up and he embraced Prataparudra Maharaj. And he said, "You are the most munificent personality. You are the most munificent personality. Because you were reminding me about Krishna. You were filling my consciousness with Krishna." So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. And by absorbing our consciousness in hearing constantly, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. What does Nityam mean?
Always.
Always. Continuously. Like that. So, continuously hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, every day, all day, every day, if we can. Hearing and chanting that, just soaking like a sponge, just soaking our consciousness with topics about Krishna, with Krishna Katha. Then we can fix our consciousness upon Krishna. As opposed to associating with materialists who will simply absorb our consciousness in material thoughts, which would contaminate our consciousness and take our consciousness away from Krishna. But by absorbing ourselves in Srimad Bhagavatam, then, because it is the topmost scripture, it will give us full satisfaction in relationship to our relation with Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be like a deity, right? It is the deity of Krishna. It is non-different from Krishna. So the 10th canto, which we're reading now, is Krishna's face. Like that. And chapters 29 to 33 of the 10th canto, which we read last year, they are the smile of Krishna's face. The smile is the most beautiful part of the face. If someone smiles, their face immediately becomes attractive. Like that. So it is the smile of Krishna's face. And these particular chapters here are extremely intimate because they are discussing further and even more deeply and further and deeper the love of the gopis for Krishna. Very hard to reconcile. So in these purports here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the love of the gopis for Krishna should not be misconstrued as being immoral. Right? Because Krishna is the absolute truth. He is the Param Satyam, Dhimihi, to be meditated upon, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He is situated in Shuddha Sattva. In the material world, we have the three modes of material nature. Right? We have goodness, passion, and ignorance, like that. And they contaminate our consciousness. But within the spiritual world, there is no contamination of the three modes of material nature. Right? There is only Shuddha Sattva, which means purified goodness. It is even beyond the mode of goodness in this world. It is purified goodness. And Krishna's form, and Krishna's pastimes, and Krishna's associates, and the holy Dham, they're constituted of Shuddha Sattva. They are all situated within pure goodness. They are all Satchit Ananda Vigraha. So therefore, there is no contamination within Krishna and within Krishna's pastimes. So mundane persons who are less intelligent and who view Krishna's pastimes from a mundane perspective, with mundane intelligence, they think that Krishna's pastimes are immoral. And the gopis' behavior is immoral. But it is not immoral, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out here. In the purport for verse 60, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, or Prabhupada, or it is written, based on the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Krishna is always remains praiseworthy by all, even while accepting worldly criticism for his cow tending and wandering in the forest. So people criticize Krishna for tending cows and wandering in the forest. In other words, what do we call someone who tends cows and wanders in the forest? What do we call them?
Cowherd.
A cowherd, yeah. Or in Sanskrit, what do we call them? For those who speak pure Sanskrit. Gopa? Yeah. Like that. What is someone who... Vaishya, right? A Vaishya. So at the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthira Maharaj, which will be spoken about later in this canto, Shishupal, who was very envious of Krishna, Shishupal, what was his relationship with Krishna?
Cousin.
Right? He was Krishna's cousin. Right? But he was born envious of Krishna. Shishupal was born with four arms. Right? And when the child came out with four arms, the mother was a little disturbed, right? As you would imagine. Imagine if you were born with four arms, right? What would your mother say? Right? Get rid of those two arms, hey? You know? Right? It's too much. Right? It'd be very disturbing for the mother that the child had four arms. But the sages informed the mother of Shishupal. They said, a person will come and he will hold the child within his lap. And at that time, the two arms will disappear. Right? So that will be very pleasing to you. But unfortunately, that person will also be the cause of your child's death. So you'll get happiness and distress simultaneously. That's the material world. That's the material world. There's no mistake. Same as the benediction which was given to Maharaj Chitraketu. Right? He wanted a son. And then he was blessed by the sages, you have a son. But the sages said he will be the cause of your happiness and distress. That is the nature of the material world, isn't it? That's the material world. Right? It's all happiness and distress. Perfect combination, perfect mixture like that. So, Krishna came as the cousin of Shishupal. He came to see Shishupal as a baby and he put Shishupal upon his lap. And when Shishupal was placed upon Krishna's lap, his two arms disappeared. And then he only had two arms. So his mother was very happy. But then she realized that Vasudev, or Krishna, would be the death of her child. So she said, please have mercy upon my child. Now, please, you know, spare my child. Krishna said, I will tolerate 100 insults from this child. But after 100 insults, I can tolerate no more. I will have to kill him. So the mother said, so be it. That's fair. I mean, that's quite decent, you know, for someone to say to you, you know, you can insult me 100 times, right? I don't mind. But after that, I'll kill you. Right? So that's what Krishna said. He said, I'll take 100, but then after that, that's all I can take. So then, Shishupal at the Rajasuya sacrifice, he was insulting Krishna because everyone discussed who should be the most prominent person in the sacrifice, who should be offered the first offering within the sacrifice. And you have to understand that that sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all the demigods came, physically came to the sacrifice. Indra was sitting there, Chandra was sitting there, Surya was sitting there. And even higher than that, Brahma came. And even higher than Brahma, Shiva came. And even higher than Shiva, Lord Vishnu himself came. And still amongst all of those personalities, right, and all the great sages, Narada, and all the Mahajans, Bhishma was there. Right? I mean, you had the highest, most exalted assembly within the universe sitting in one place, right? And and was it Nakula? Nakula said, because Nakula was the son of the Ashwini Kumaras, right, who were extremely intelligent demigods. So Nakula was known for his wisdom. So Nakula said, out of everyone here, out of all these exalted personalities, the first offering should go to Krishna. He is the most exalted. And Shishupala could not tolerate that. Right? He just stood up and he said, who is this Krishna? Right? He has been living in the forest as a Vaishya, tending cows, running around barefoot. Right? We have Kshatriyas here, we have Brahmanas here. You want to give this to a Vaishya? Yeah? I mean, a Vaishya is not considered as exalted as the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, like that. What to speak of the demigods and so forth, like that, and the sages, the rishis. You want to give to a Vaishya? So he was insulting Krishna like this. So Krishna was just there with these counting beads. One, two, three, four, five, you know, 99, 100, okay? Sudarshan Chakra, like that, his head just got taken off, like that. The whole time that Shishupala was insulting Krishna, then Bhima wanted to get up and crush Shishupala. He just wanted to pick him up and just crush him into powder, like that. So he was sitting there and he was trying to get up, right? Because he was sitting on the seat, on the throne, and who was sitting next to him?
Bhishma.
Right? Grandfather Bhishma. And Bhishma had his hand on Bhima, on his hand. Bhima was trying to get up. And Bhima was the strongest man in the world. Bhima was as strong as 80,000 elephants. Right? So he was trying to get up. And Bhishma, I mean, this is how powerful Bhishma was. Because Shantanu, his father, did austerities to receive a son as powerful as Lord Balaram. Right? So Bhishma was practically as powerful as Balaram. So Bhishma was standing there with his hand, not even moving, just sitting there with his hand. And Bhima was trying to get up, as strong as 80,000, he couldn't even get up. And Bhishma was just saying, just wait, it's okay. He said, Krishna will take care of everything, it's okay. So then after 100, then Krishna killed him like that. So mundane people with mundane intelligence, they insult Krishna, and they cannot understand his exalted position. And they say that, as it says here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, he tends cows, he wanders in the forest. He takes meals with monkeys. What sort of a god is this? Right? If we go out on the street of Melbourne and say, please worship our monkey meal-sharing god, people will say, you guys are crazy. Right? Our god eats his meals with monkeys. Right? He sits down with monkeys, right? And he gets the yogurt, which is stolen from the pot of yogurt hanging in the cool room. And he takes the yogurt and he feeds it to all his monkey friends. And when everyone's eaten as much yogurt as they can, and then Krishna's giving yogurt to the monkeys, and the monkeys go, like that, we're full. And Krishna gets the yogurt and he smashes it on the ground. And he says, what's the use of the yogurt? Even the monkeys won't eat it. Right? This is Krishna. Right? Stealing yogurt and seducing other men's wives. This is the most immoral activity. To establish an illicit relationship with someone else's wife or someone else's husband. That is considered the most immoral activity. And yet Krishna does that. So then, this can only be explained that Krishna is on the platform of Shuddha Sattva. Right? He is on the platform of purified goodness. In other words, there is no contamination of lust within his consciousness. And there is no effect of the mode of passion, ignorance, or goodness within his consciousness. So therefore there is no defect on Krishna's behalf. Because there is no contamination of material modes. There's no material contamination. It's pure. And those who criticize the gopis are also foolish. Because the gopis are glorified here by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur because their love is exclusive. There's no such thing as this kind of love in this world. Prabhupada said the closest thing to pure love, the love in the spiritual world, is the mother's love for the child. Just like we were speaking about this point the other day, and when the tsunami happened a few years ago, there was a very famous picture taken in, I can't remember which place it was. It was one of the places where the tsunami hit. It might have been Phuket. I can't remember where it was. And the picture was, because when the tsunami came, the water withdrew, right, at the beach. Like everyone was on the beach, suddenly all the water went back like that. So anyone who had a little bit of intelligence understood, right, there's a tidal wave coming or a tsunami or something coming. So people began to run. So there was a picture, a very famous picture. All the water had gone back and you could see in the background in the distance there was this huge wall of water was coming. And there was a father with his two children. They were obviously out in the water, a long way out, and they were running away from the wave. And the mother was further back towards the beach. She was running towards the wave to save her children. That's love. Right? That is selflessness. Right? Running towards the wave. Right? And actually all four of them lived. Remarkably. Like that. A lot of people died in that tsunami. Hundreds of thousands of people died. 100,000 or something people died. But actually those four, they actually lived by the grace of Krishna. Like that. So the point is that that is love. So that gives you an understanding of what the love of the spiritual world is like. It's so exclusive and it's so selfless. The gopis, they hear Krishna's flute in the middle of the night, they just run. They're just stunned, they become stunned, and they just become mesmerized. They think Krishna is calling us. Because when Krishna plays his flute, each devotee hears their name being called. Right? When Krishna plays his flute, Radharani hears, Radharani, Radharani, come to the forest, Radharani, like that. And Lalita hears, Lalita, Lalita. Like that. So as soon as they hear Krishna calling their name through the sound of the flute, they just become intoxicated, mad, and they just run. Their love is exclusive, right? And they don't even care that they're going to lose their entire reputation, right? They've just left their fathers, their husbands, even their children, and they've just run into the forest, right? And they don't care. So be it. Let everyone criticize us, right? The gopis' love is so pure and exclusive and so exalted. Narad Muni came to Krishna one time, and Narada said to Krishna, he wanted to understand the love of Krishna's devotees. Right? Who are the most exalted of Krishna's devotees? Krishna said, if you want to understand who is the most exalted of my devotees, you go to my devotees and you tell them I have a headache. And the only way to cure my headache is to have the dust of their feet upon my head. That will cure my headache. Now you go and ask all of my devotees and see who will give the dust. Like that. Can you imagine if you know Jitendriya said, you know, Krishna has a headache, please give me some dust of your feet to put on Balaba's head. Hands up if you would do it. Right? No one here would do it. I wouldn't do it. Right? Because no way I put my dust upon the dust of my feet on Balaba's head. There's no way we'd do that. The gopis, right, when Narada went to all the different devotees said, no, 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 we will go to hell. We cannot put the dust of our feet upon Krishna's head. Right? And then when Narada finally went to the gopis, he said to the gopis, Krishna has a headache. And the gopis said, then immediately, what can be done? What can we do? How can we relieve Krishna's headache? And Narada said, Krishna said, the only way to relieve his headache is to take the dust of these devotees' feet, put them, and they said, immediately take it. And Narada said, are you not afraid that you will go to hell? And they said, let us go to hell. Right? But if Krishna has a headache, and if he is suffering, and this will relieve his headache, then you take it immediately. We'll worry about hell later on. Don't worry about that. Right? That is pure love. Right? That is the love of the gopi, so it cannot be criticized. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out here that the criticism which is there, that is based upon mundane intelligence. Now, when people don't understand Krishna or the gopis' position, that is mundane intelligence. They're just trying to perceive Krishna's pastimes through a mundane perspective, through material consciousness. You can't understand Krishna through material consciousness. Consciousness must be purified. And when one's consciousness is purified, then one can begin to understand Krishna. Now, today is a very auspicious day because today is the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is our Param Guru. Or for those who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada, he's the Param Guru, like that. Srila Prabhupada said that one should pray to one's grand spiritual master. Because just like in a family relationship, the father's duty and the mother's duty is to be very strict upon the children. That is the duty of the father and the mother. They must be strict upon the children. Otherwise the children will develop bad character. Right? But the grandfather and grandmother are very soft. Right? The grandmother and grandfather don't get on the case of the children very much. You know, they spoil the children like that. That's the nature like that. So Prabhupada said similarly in spiritual life, you pray to the grandfather. Because your Guru Maharaj may be very heavy on you. He may be very firm and very strict on you because he wants you to develop good character. Right? So he will be very strict with you. But your grand spiritual master, he will be very soft. So Prabhupada was saying to his disciples, you pray to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he will be very soft. And similarly, our grandfather is Srila Prabhupada and our great-grandfather is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we can pray to him. He will be very merciful to us. Like that. So he appeared on this day in Jagannath Puri in 1876, like that. So he appeared on this exact day, and when he appeared in this material world, when he came from his mother's womb, his umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin thread, which is quite auspicious. And when he appeared, the astrologer came, and the astrologer said that he had the 32 markings of a Mahapurush, or a great personality. And they looked at his astrological chart, and they said this personality will be a great religious figure, a great teacher of pure religion, of pure Sanatana Dharma religion. So even from his birth, he was considered to be a very exalted personality. At the age of 6 months, Bhaktivinoda Thakur at that time was living in Jagannath Puri. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's residence as the chief magistrate of Puri was just maybe 200 or 300 metres from the Jagannath temple in Jagannath Puri. And on Lord Jagannath, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was only 6 months old, then Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra festival came past his house. And the cart stopped. Sometimes you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that sometimes Lord Jagannath's cart stops in the middle of the Rath Yatra. And when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in front of the cart, then sometimes when the cart would stop, they would have to bring elephants to try to move the cart. And the elephants would come and they would stand behind the cart and try to push the cart. And even the elephants could not move the cart. Lord Jagannath's cart would stop, and if he did not want to move, he would not move. And only when Lord Chaitanya came behind the cart and touched his head to the cart, then Lord Jagannath began to move. So Jagannath stopped the cart stopped in front of the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur for 3 days. And after 3 days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his wife, Bhagavati Devi, bring Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as a 6-month-old baby onto the cart in front of Lord Jagannath. And at that time, one of Lord Jagannath's garlands broke and fell and landed around the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been praying to Krishna, please send me a pure devotee. Please send me a child who is a pure devotee who can assist me in establishing the mission of Lord Chaitanya in this world. So he understood at that time when the garland fell upon Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, understood this is the ray of Vishnu I've been praying for. This is the pure devotee who has come from Vaikuntha to assist me in establishing this movement. So then, when he was a very young boy, he was only 3 or 4 years old, one time someone brought fresh mangoes into the house.
And he was only 3 or 4 years old, and immediately he ran up to the mangoes and he said, "This is mine," just like any 3 or 4 year old child would. Right? Picks up the mango and he said, "This is mine." And Bhaktivinoda, his father, stood up and he said, "What is this?" He said that fresh fruit has come into the house and the first portion must be offered to Lord Krishna. Right? No one in this house should ever take any fruit which is not first offered to Lord Krishna. And Bhakti Sanjaya Saraswati Thakur was only 3 or 4 years old at the time. I think he was 4 years old at the time. He took a vow, right? At that time he said, "I am an offender. I have been overtaken by greed." He said, "I shall never taste this fruit again in my life." And for the rest of his life, Srila Prabhupada said, whenever they offered him mango, he would say, "No, I cannot take. I am an offender." A lifelong vow. I mean, that's very powerful consciousness. Prabhupada said, this is acharya. He said, this is how determined one must be to go back to Godhead. He must have this kind of determination, which is shown by our acharyas. By the age of 7, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita. And he could deliver discourses on the Bhagavad Gita. And he went to school, and he always received very high marks at school, but he never did any homework. Right? Because he was Shrutidhara, which means he could hear something once and remember it perfectly. So he would go to school, listen to the class, the teachers would say whatever they wanted to say, he would remember it all, and then he would always pass his exams. But when he came home and he was supposed to do his homework, he would just read the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Right? He'd read the books of Narottamdas Thakur, Prem Bhakti Chandrikar and Pratana, and all these kind of books, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books. He's absorbed his consciousness in Krishna. By the age of 11, one time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was supposed to go and deliver a public lecture. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur fell sick. His health was not good, he could not attend. He sent his 11-year-old son to go and deliver the lecture. And his son sat on the Vyasasan and delivered the lecture to many, many people who were sitting there listening. And he was quoting verses from the Vedas, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, explaining it very deep. And everyone was just amazed. You know, how can an 11-year-old boy speak like a Maha Pandit like that? Then he became very, very influential in his life. He became a great scholar. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur advised him when he was a young man to go and take initiation from Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj. So he approached Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj and he said, "Please, Gurudev, please give me your mercy. Please allow me to become your disciple." And Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj said, "I will ask Gauranga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? Come back tomorrow." So Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur went away and then he came back the next day and he said, "You told me to come back and you said you would ask Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya, if you could initiate me like that, if I could become your disciple." And Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj said, "I forgot to ask him. Come back tomorrow." So he came back the next day. And then he said to Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, "What did Lord Chaitanya say?" And he said, "He did not answer." So he did not want to give initiation to Bhaktisanta. He didn't want any. Point is, he didn't want any disciples. He did not feel himself qualified to become a guru. So then, Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur said, he began to cry, and he said to Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, he said, "If you do not give me your shelter, then I will go and drown myself in the Ganga." And because of his total sincerity, he meant it. Right? And because of his total sincerity, then Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj gave him his kripa, his mercy, and initiated him. He became his only disciple. So then, while he was around about in his 30s, he took a vow to chant 1 billion names of Krishna. So then, he was chanting 3 lakhs, 192 rounds a day, for 11 years. And each day, he was taking a vow to only eat one handful of rice. And he was sitting in a thatched hut in Mayapur, and it was just like a little thatched hut, and he was just sitting there chanting his japa all day, and he would just, at the end of the day, he would cook one handful of rice and eat that, and he'd go and take his bath in the Ganges, and while he was sitting in his hut, when the rains came, when the rainy season came, if the water was coming through his hut, he didn't even bother to fix the hut. He would just get an umbrella and just hold it there, and he would just keep chanting. totally absorbed and fixed. And he became so powerful from chanting 1 billion names of Krishna, he became totally empowered. And then this is how he became so empowered to preach. Then he gave himself, his spiritual master, Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj, passed away from this world. And then he gave himself sannyas in front of the picture of Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj. In other words, he was on such an exalted level of consciousness that Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj initiated him through the picture. Right? He could perceive the presence of his spiritual master so much through the picture that his Guru Maharaj gave him initiation. He took sannyas. And then he became known as the Simha Guru, the Lion Guru. It is said the Mayavadis were so afraid of him when he was walking down the streets of Calcutta and so forth. If the Mayavadis saw him coming, they would cross to the other side of the road, right, to avoid him, because he was so powerful in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. He could debate and defeat anyone, right, on any subject matter, what to speak of Krishna consciousness. So sometimes the Mayavadis would cross the street, and he would cross the street and physically grab them and shake them and say, "Why are you cheating the people? Why are you?" And the Mayavadis are just like a Simha Guru, like a lion guru. So he initiated 60,000 disciples and opened 64 Gaudiya Mutts within India at that time. And he also established centres in England and Burma and Germany also. So then, near the end of his life, because he became so prominent as a guru within India and so forth, then people were just taking initiation from him just in order to gain some fame. People would say, "I am a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur." So when he saw that his, he called them neophyte disciples, were swelling, when there were more and more neophyte disciples coming in his amongst his disciples, then he decided to leave this world. He gave up this world. But out of everyone, all of his disciples, his 60,000 disciples, one disciple was especially prominent, right? And that was A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, right? Who perfectly understood the mission and the mood of his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. On their first meeting in Calcutta in 1922, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur met Srila Prabhupada for the first time, then the first thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to him was, "You are a very intelligent young man. You speak the English language. Please go and preach the message of Lord Chaitanya Dev in the Western countries in the English language." And then Prabhupada, who was a follower of Gandhi at that time, Prabhupada was only 26 years old, Srila Prabhupada began to argue with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, "How can we preach Sanatana Dharma if India is not a free country? It does not gain independence?" And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur smashed that argument. Right? He said, "This is all temporary. Right? Krishna consciousness is so important, and spreading Krishna consciousness is so important, it cannot wait for independence. It cannot wait for anything." Srila Prabhupada once said, the devotee said to Prabhupada, "What happens if there's a nuclear war?" Prabhupada said, "We will go on preaching." He said, "The bombs will come or they will not come." You know, we'll go on preaching. That is the mood of the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of Srila Prabhupada. So he said to Prabhupada, "You go and preach." And then he defeated this argument that Prabhupada was giving to him about following Gandhi and independence in India and so forth. And Prabhupada said he liked it. He said he liked being smashed by his spiritual master. And when he left, then his friend said to him, "How did you like this sattva?" And Prabhupada said, "He's a very nice sattva." And Prabhupada from that moment accepted him within his heart as his guru. And even though he did not meet Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for many, many years after that, he always meditated on him every day, right? And meditated on the instruction which he'd received from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then after taking initiation from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then Prabhupada, many years later, fulfilled the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So today is the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, also the disappearance day of Srila Gaur Govinda Swami, who was one of the great disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who passed away in Mayapur on this day in 1996, 11 years ago. Gorgo Vinda Maharaj established, Prabhupada made him a GBC man, and he established a very beautiful Krishna Balaram temple in Bhubaneswar, in Orissa. He's an Orion-born devotee. Prabhupada gave him, because when he became Prabhupada's disciple, he was already quite, he was older than most of Prabhupada's disciples at that time. He was an Indian-born disciple. And when he took initiation from Prabhupada, Prabhupada gave him Brahman initiation and sannyas at the same time, because he could see how elevated Gaur Govindaswamy was. And then he became a very powerful preacher and a very powerful disciple of Prabhupada and a very powerful guru within our movement. And he was attracting and delivering many, many devotees within ISKCON. He was making many devotees and making many disciples very powerful. And then in Mayapur, 11 years ago on this day, in the evening time, he was sitting in his room and he was discussing the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya with Lord Jagannath in Rath Yatra Jagannath Puri, and suddenly he fell back and he grabbed his chest and he had a heart attack, and then he left this world, right, in Mayapur Dham on this day, a very auspicious day in Mayapur Dham, the most auspicious place in the universe, while speaking about Lord Chaitanya at Rath Yatra, very auspicious. So he left this world and went back to Godhead. So today is a very auspicious day, remember those personalities. And at 12:30, for any devotees who are around, those devotees who don't have to do other services, we'll have Pushpanjali and Guru Puja, and then a feast at 1 o'clock in honour of Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur. Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur ki, Gorga Shodas Babaji, sorry, Gorga Vinda Maharaja ki, Sri Purushottam Das Thakur ki. Any questions or comments on what we discussed?
How do we know that we are committing thanks to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedic literature? How do we find out?
It means that sometimes you'll hear descriptions within the Bhagavatam or in other places in the Vedas which are very extraordinary. Just like, you know, there, in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there is mention of mangoes, which are so big that when they fall from the side of Mandara Hill in the centre of the universe, then when they land on the ground and they burst, a river of mango juice comes out and flows down throughout the universe. Right? And then it's also described in the fifth canto that there are eagles which fly around in between planets, and they fly down and they pick up elephants and they feed the elephants to their babies. And as they're flying around in between planets, they lay their eggs, and their eggs come through the stratosphere, say, of the Earth, and as they're entering into the Earth and they begin burning up as they enter into the Earth's atmosphere, then the eggs hatch and baby eagles come out and fly out. Huge eagles just fly around in space like that. So some devotees or some people may doubt those statements of the Bhagavatam of the Vedas. So if there is some doubt there, then that is an offence. Like that. So that offence has to be overcome. Like that. You have to overcome those doubts by cultivation of knowledge, by hearing from very advanced Vaishnavas. And by hearing in their association, then you'll develop faith in those statements. But if there is any doubt and you do commit any offence, it's a more serious offence if you actually verbally doubt those things. Like if you say, you know, if you say those things and say, oh, that couldn't be true, then that actually becomes an offence. So if that thing happened, then you have to offer your obeisances to the Bhagavatam and offer arti to the Bhagavatam and so forth, and clear up your doubts through knowledge. I think so. Is that okay? Any other question or comment?
I don't doubt any of this at all. I'm trying to understand how was Srila Vyasadeva empowered, and how did the Srimad Bhagavatam become the literal incarnation? Did it come through the parampara, or did he even direct the sections, or was he someone from the spiritual world?
Yeah, it is said in the Bhagavatam, in the 7th chapter of the first canto, that after Narada instructed him, that he says, your work is not complete, then it's said that he went into a deep state of meditation, and in that state of meditation he had full realization of the absolute truth, and it's said that he had a darshan of Krishna and the material energy side by side. So he had a full realization of the absolute truth, and then in that realized state of consciousness, he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. So he was a fully realized, but It's actually said he's a Shakya Vaishavatar, which means he's a jiva who is empowered by Krishna to do the work of God, of Krishna, like that. So he's a fully empowered personality, like that. Any other questions or comments? Been discussed? Okay. Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur ki, Bhogasholas Babji Maharaj ki, Bhogavinda Maharaj ki, Purushottama Das Thakur ki, Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam ki.